A few years ago, I discovered Keeping Together in Time, written by the great historian William H. McNeill near the end of his career. This short book examines the historical role of dance and military drill in creating what McNeill calls muscular bonding, and sheds a new light on the importance of theater, communal dance, and movement. It also solved a long-standing puzzle in my own mind. Having been raised in the Netherlands, I had always wondered how a group of simple Dutch peasants and fishermen had won their liberation from the mighty Spanish Empire. The 80 Years' War, which lasted from the late 16th to the mid-17th century, began as a series of guerrilla actions, and it seemed destined to remain that way, since the ill-disciplined, ill-paid soldiers regularly fled under volleys of musket fire. This changed when Prince Maurice of Orange became the leader of the Dutch rebels. Still in his early 20s, he had recently completed his schooling in Latin, which enabled him to read 1,500-year-old Roman manuals on military tactics. He learned that the Roman general Lycurgus had introduced marching in step to the Roman legions, and that the historian Plutarch had attributed their invincibility to this practice. He wrote, "It was at once a magnificent and terrible sight to see them march on to the tune of their flutes, without any disorder in their ranks, any discomposure in their minds, or change in their countenances, calmly and cheerfully moving with music to the deadly fight." Prince Maurice instituted close-order drill, accompanied by drums, flutes, and trumpets in his ragtag army. This collective ritual not only provided his men with a sense of purpose and solidarity, but also made it possible for them to execute complicated maneuvers. Close-order drill, subsequently, spread across Europe, and to this day, the major services of the U.S. military spend liberally on their marching bands, even though fifes and drums no longer accompany troops into battle. Neuroscientist Jaak Panksepp, who was born in the tiny Baltic country of Estonia, told me the remarkable story of Estonia's singing revolution. In June 1987, on one of those endless subarctic summer evenings, more than 10,000 concertgoers at the Tallinn Song Festival grounds linked hands and began to sing patriotic songs that had been forbidden during half a century of Soviet occupation. These songfests and protests continued, and on September 11, 1988, 300,000 people, about a quarter of the population of Estonia, gathered to sing and make a public demand for independence. By August 1991, the Congress of Estonia had proclaimed the restoration of the Estonian state, and when Soviet tanks attempted to intervene, people acted as human shields to protect Tallinn's radio and TV stations. As a columnist noted in the New York Times, imagine the scene in Casablanca in which the French patrons sing La Marseillaise in defiance of the Germans. Then multiply its power by a factor of thousands, and you've only begun to imagine the force of the singing revolution.